Do you like scary movies? Do you want to eat some brains? Is your chainsaw arm groovy? How bloodthirsty could a talking plant be? Eat your liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Come play with us forever, cause down here we all float. I never drink wine, so you're gonna need a bigger boat. Or a throat to choke, whether you're in the prim or dairy. Got red rum where you bled from, put your dead son in the cemetery. It's him or Carrie, be very afraid. You'll be our number one fan and get carried away. All work and no play, you know it always means you're in trouble, son. I came to chew gum and kick ass and I'm all out of bubble gum. What if Quint killed Jaws' father? What if the Blob's body was marijuana? What if the leprechaun got a job as a bank guard? What if the wolfman had a cowbell instead of every nards? Scary movie made since Oscar Wilde was writing letters had canon to watch them all and tell you how to make them better. So put your earbuds in and forget what you're planning. It's time to take our heads and shoot them out of a cannon. 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 Head cannon.
Welcome to Head Cannon. Tonight we have a very special guest, a returning guest. We've had you on a number of times. This is your, what, third, fourth time on the show, probably?
Yeah, I think so. I think three.
Yeah, but Mr. Noah Kinsey, how are you doing this evening?
Good, how are you doing? Great to see you guys, as always.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. Glad you're doing
well.
Where
are you living right now, Noah?
I'm in Los Angeles still.
Will you tell us about the warm?
It isn't right now. I can't tell you about the warm because it is cold here. I mean, not Wait, compared what's... to where you are, but it is cold.
It's been so cold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, we've just been covered in, I don't know how it is in Indianapolis, Brent, but we've been covered in covered in just a foot or more of snow for days now.
Oh,
and
wow. It's 7 degrees right now. My computer says it's 7.
Yeah, it's been below zero, like, for the last couple days here.
Is your house able to keep its heat up? Mine's not.
For the most part, the kitchen gets a little, for whatever reason, the back door is pretty thin, and it's like, we keep a towel tucked underneath it to try and keep the cold out, but like the frost or the hinges on the inside are frosted over. So you can see like frost creeping in like through the cracks in the door.
Oh my God. The weather wants to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had to go get, and I think it's just due to the snow and the sub Arctic temperatures, but I spent a good deal of my day today at the auto shop because I had a bulge on my tire. There was like a tennis ball sized bulge on my tire, we've got a 2007 Honda CRV, and it's like it's got 140,000 miles on it, and we've had no fucking problems with that thing whatsoever. And so we've had
tire.
And I think it just, they said like the inner wall ruptured, I think just because of the cold. But so I had to drop like $2,000 today on like new tires and new battery, new like brakes and calipers. And I was like, God damn, that's a lot. But we've had the car for like 4.5 years and have put, other than like routine maintenance and oil changes and stuff, like haven't had to put any money into it. So like, you know, $2,000 over the course of like almost 5 years. For a car that's that old.
You know? How do you get a bulge in your tire though? Is it like from hitting like a pothole?
Maybe that would weaken it, but I think I guess just the cold. Yeah, there probably was a weak spot in there, but I assume it's got to be the cold because it wasn't like that the last time I drove it. And then we looked at it yesterday. And it was like, holy fuck! There's like a tennis ball sticking out of the tire. You know?
What were you gonna say, Noah?
Oh, I was saying, I'm just listening. This is crazy.
Well, I was going to say, your car is like a tumor.
Yeah, that's what Shauna said. She was like, yo, there's like a tumor in your tire. That's exactly what it looked like. And my car was like, it's not a tumor.
Nice.
But I wanted to ask, you know, I think since the last time we talked to you, I've seen, you know, it's hard to keep up with people just on social media if you don't get a chance to talk regularly, but I saw you had a movie out, Lullaby, and it looks, I don't know, just from what I've gleaned from your social media, it looks like you took it to maybe some festivals and competitions. It's not available for like wide consumption yet, is it?
No, not yet. So we're in the festival circuit. We started this past May.
Nice.
We're in it until late summer of this year, where San Diego is our last festival that we're going to be in. But yeah, man, it's doing great. It's won about 20 awards at this point and nominated for about the same. So it's amazing how it's been received. So that's awesome. I'm really happy with that. Opened a lot of doors, which is great.
Yeah. Will you tell us a little bit about just the process, like how the concept of the movie came about, a little bit about what it's about, and then what your journey's been like from, conception to fruition and all that?
Yeah, so it's called Lullaby. It starts out with two police responding to a mother who's freaking out because her ex was supposed to drop off their daughter, and he left an ominous voicemail saying he's not bringing her back. It starts with that, and then it cuts back and forth between the police and the daddy daughter having a wonderful daddy daughter day on the Santa Monica Pier. So, and you just don't really know what is going on until the very end. It's about 8.5 minutes long, but I wrote it probably 2019. Actually, these things take a long time. This is one of those projects where I didn't want to just make it without doing it right. I have other smaller things that I've done where it's just like, yeah, let's just have fun and make it. But this one just felt like it needed to get a proper budget and proper people in place. And I'm, even though that's a long time to wait to make something after writing it, it was the right decision.
Yeah.
How can we watch it?
So,
I know it's
once a festival. Yeah, with festivals, they require that it's not publicly viewed, because why are you going to buy tickets to a festival if you can see it for free?
Right.
So we'll find a way to make it free once the last festival's done, because you don't really make – it's really hard for anybody to make money off of a short film. So really what it's for and what the intention was a proof of concept for my production company. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of 2022, I felt like after 10 years of making other people's projects look good, it's time to go out there on my own. So I established my production company, assembled my team. The end of the year is when we filmed it. We filmed it in December of 2022, and May was when it was ready to start being in film festivals. So yeah, it's always a long journey. It's way longer than a lot of people think. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'm seeing you on IMDb. You have the best profile picture.
Oh, thank you so much.
You look so disappointed in me.
And I am, so it's accurate, so that's great.
Dude, it's a good picture, man. The tattoos are
thanks, dude. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool to see you, like, I don't know, to see someone I know on IMDb. I don't know, because I love
thanks, man. Stuff. Yeah, that means a lot, for sure.
That's wild. Well, do you, just kind of while we're talking about it, while I'm thinking about it, do you want to plug your production company, or would you like people to follow that on social media? Would that be beneficial?
Sure. Yeah. If you go to like Instagram, it's Pier Left Productions or at Pier Left Productions. That's my production company. I also have my coffee company, Spartacus Coffee. Definitely check that out for sure. Yeah, 5%. It's going well. It's going well. We did a soft launch. We're this year in March. We're gonna have our first brick and mortar inside of a gym in North Hollywood, which is great. But it's great. Like, and it's a cause-based or mission-based coffee where 5% of every sale goes to No Kid Hungry, which is a nonprofit that pays to alleviate school lunch debt, stocks up local food banks, and also fights for kids in Washington. So it's a great organization to be a part of.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the temperature of Hollywood after kind of the turmoil of this last year, and if you
sure. Like,
because I've got a buddy who has worked in animation and stuff, and he recently was just, he and a friend of his wrote a script for an animated feature, which is it's a phenomenal script, and he recently secured an agent, and he was saying that the agent's advice was kind of to really wait a year to shop it around at all. I think because of all the turmoil and because of probably impending strikes on the animation side of things, for that union, But yeah, I'm just curious about your thoughts on all that stuff and how you view it.
So yeah, so it was a very tough year with, for about almost 6 months being strike, most of that being a dual strike with the writers and actors. Things are going to start to ramp up in productions, for sure. But in July, IATSE, which is like the crew, contract comes up along with, I think, Teamsters as well. So there's a little bit of tension going into that. I know people in that world. So we'll see. Studios got hit a lot harder than they're like to make it seem. So for them, it does not benefit them to have a strike. I think initially they were just hoping the writers and actors would cave because even though a lot of people think those in Hollywood make millions of dollars, the fact of the matter is the vast majority of people are, you know, middle income. Yeah. You always hear about the stars and the outliers, but the vast, vast, vast majority of them are like middle income.
Dudes holding boom mics and building sets and like, you know, all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, that's right. Gonna be IATSE and Teamsters are the ones that do kind of that type of the ground level. They call it below the line work. Yeah. Above the line are like the stars and director people whose pay is negotiable versus below the line, which is typically union rates. But I'm hopeful for this year because, again, studios are hurting pretty bad. And just this past week at CES, 5 of the union leaders in Hollywood were at a panel speaking, and they discussed AI and the strikes. And it was – they basically said, you know, if IATSE goes on strike – even though technically writers still have to keep writing because they can't just drop their pens since they have a deal, nothing's going to be made because you can't make things out here without IATSE being in the union. And I think, and so they're basically saying like, yeah, we're supporting these other unions like they supported us this year. And with, I think that was some strong messaging to send to the studio heads that just because people were hurting last year doesn't mean that they're just going to take some shit sandwich of a deal this year. They're still gonna stand up for what they need, and I mean, I'm all in support of that. But I think because of that, I think they'll probably get deals comparable to the Actors Union and the Writers Union this last year. So,
right,
I feel worst case scenario there'll be a strike authorization from the unions, but I would be shocked if studios let it come to that because they are hurting so badly right now.
Right. So yeah, you wouldn't. That makes sense. You wouldn't expect it to really drag on as long as.
It would not for sure. I mean, think about it. Like both Disney and Warner Brothers, all of them had multiple superhero movies this year, and all of them lost money. There was not one that made money this year. Yeah. They are really, and they count on those tentpole movies. I mean, Barbie was the biggest movie of the year. Oppenheimer is close to that, along with Super Mario Brothers. Like, those are not the ones that the studios, even though it's great for the studios, they weren't counting on those to be hits. The ones they were counting on being hits just severely underperformed. So even though the studio heads have to signal strength because they have to do their song and dance for shareholders, the fact of the matter is they're at a very vulnerable position right now. And with the union standing strong and articulating that, I'm feeling pretty confident about this year.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about, I'm curious because I've had this discussion with people because not that Barbie or Oppenheimer wouldn't have been profitable. I think they absolutely would have been, but how much do you think of that is attributable to kind of this flash in the pan, like random, the fact that it took on its own life, this Barbenheimer thing, meme, became its own thing on social media. How much do you think that contributed to the success of those movies?
So to your point, they both would have been very successful. They both were well-loved and well-received, and there's a reason that more people came. But yes, without that viral moment of the absurdity of these things coming out the same weekend and just kind of like the inside joke that they somehow like you need to see them back to back. So people did. Yeah, that helped out significantly. I mean, I don't know like a number. I don't know if it's like if they only would have made a third. I'm skeptical that Barbie would have made $1.4 billion. I'm skeptical it would have hit a billion. I'm glad it did because it's an excellent movie.
Yeah.
I think Oppenheimer, though, if I'm being honest, I think it got the healthiest bump from that cultural moment. Nothing against Nolan. Nolan is a masterful director. However, you're looking at this is somewhat an outlier of a Nolan movie. It's a 3-hour R-rated Nolan movie. That's very tough when most of Nolan's movies are PG-13.
Yeah.
So I think that got a healthier bump from this than Barbie. Yeah, but yeah, they both benefited.
Yeah, I think, and I'm sorry, I'm looking up what Tenet, because I think Nolan's pretty reliable, but I don't know that Tenet did that. What did Tenet do?
Look at Tenet. Tenet was terrible. It came out, he insisted on that coming out just like months after the theaters even opened up. So don't look at Tenet. That's not true. A good indicator of Nolan's success whatsoever.
That's true. Yeah, and it is anecdotal, but... And both those, I thoroughly enjoyed Barbie and Oppenheimer. I thought they were great, but I probably would have waited until streaming or something. It just so happened that I had a friend in my improv group. They, for their birthday, they were celebrating by going to see Barbenheimer, and they invited like all their friends to, they were like, yeah, we're going to go watch Oppenheimer. I was like, yeah, fuck it. That sounds good. Like I'll spend the day watching those movies. I want to see them, but I probably wouldn't have gone to see them had it not been for this thing, you know what I mean?
For sure. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But, well, and then one other question for you, just because I probably read more about this than other people, but I'm not like in it, you know what I mean? Scouring. But I have heard a little bit about the name of the Directors Union, the Directors Guild?
DGA.
Yeah, DGA. Do you have any thoughts on their... just because I've read a little bit about how they kind of, maybe their deal wasn't as good as the other deals that were struck because they kind of, do you feel like they caved or do you have any thoughts about that? Or that you want to say, you don't have to, you don't have to get into it if you don't want to. I'm just curious.
Oh no, and trust me, like feel free to keep asking questions about this. I'm happy to talk about it. I think that's subjective. I think Directors Guild has a habit of signing pretty quickly. But also they're in a little bit more favorable position with the studios. So studio heads tend to give a lot more credit to named directors, for the success of films more than like they do actors and writers, to be perfectly frank. So directors tend to have, granted, it's not just a film director that's in the DGA, it's second unit director. There's a lot of different positions. But for one, they tend to have more favorable terms anyway. But also, AI isn't as much of an existential threat to directors as it was to writers and actors, which is very much an existential threat. I mean, it threatens the soul of our industry. And I mean, it'd be stupid anyway for studios to utilize AI for those areas, but they're all about cutting costs. And one thing I do want to specify when it comes to the studios, we're only talking the 8 that are in the AMPTP.
Right.
The ones that they negotiated with. So one of the reasons why studios were a little bit careful, besides just, some conspiratorial stuff that's more accurate than not, is just the fact that they don't want to just immediately agree to all these terms for the actors and writers if the other production companies outside of the 8 are allowed to do it, because then they have an advantage on the big 8. So yeah. There's that debate on how much do we give, because like with AI, quite honestly, A24, that's not a production company that's kind of coming up, they're not in the AMPTP, so if they, it'd be stupid, and they're auteur-driven, so they wouldn't do it, I don't think, knock on wood. But they could, if they wanted to, use AI to write scripts. They didn't agree to anything.
Yeah.
The non-AMPTP studios tend to follow suit with the studios to stay competitive, which is why the main 8 want to make sure that they still kind of have that upper hand. I mean, it behooves all these other production companies to follow union guidelines because they want to use union actors.
Yeah. Well, and,
but, yeah.
Well, in A24, and that's an interesting story there. Just cause, didn't they have more Oscar nominations this past year than any other studio? A24.
Yeah, they're pretty strong. I mean, yeah. they won for Everywhere Everything and, All at Once, or Everything yeah. Everywhere All at Once, whatever that's
yeah,
called.
Yeah, fucking love that movie. But yeah, I think I read somewhere that they got exemptions from the because they preemptively agreed. They were like, look, whatever the deal is, like we're on board. So didn't they get an exemption where they could go ahead and continue?
They got an interim agreement is what it's called. Okay. So the SAG, the Actors Union, were really smart in writing up all these interim agreements. Lionsgate also did it in order to have the actors from the Hunger Games prequel be able to market the movie. Because you can't, if a studio is a struck studio, then SAG actors cannot market for it, which really hurt the studios this year when actors couldn't go to talk shows and talk about it. But SAG was really smart by having interim agreements with production companies, with some production companies or projects outside of the eight studios, where basically they agreed to what SAG was asking for. And then once a deal signed, then whatever the new deal would just supersede what that agreement was. But it was really smart because it was a way of SAG being like, look, these studios that aren't the big eight, they don't seem to have a problem financially with these terms. So what's your holdup?
Yeah.
So it really gave a massive benefit to all these other production companies. And because of that, their movies tended to be a little bit more profitable because actors could go out there promoting them.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And that's kind of how I took it, with just the optics of a company like A24. Yeah. Just like, yeah like they're on board. What the fuck, you know? But
yeah, it was super smart to do that because it just showed, hey, if they're not sweating it, why are you? You have all this money, Netflix.
Right.
like, step up. Like, you know, you're the only streamer that's profitable. Meanwhile, these little mom and pop production companies, sort of, not really, they have no problem using our terms. So, what's your deal?
Yeah. Right on. Well, yeah, appreciate that, man. It's super interesting to talk to somebody who's a little bit more knowledgeable about that stuff, you know, able to pay a little more attention. But to do kind of a rough transition here, do you want to mention what movie we're talking about and why you chose it?
Sure. We are talking about Friday the 13th, the very first one. Kevin Bacon at his early bacony self in a franchise that I despise. So I thought this would... So here's my deal. So everyone said, a lot of people would say, you know, oh, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, you know, Halloween, all these slashers are, you know, all crappy and they're just the same. There's no real difference. And I fundamentally disagree. And the reason why is because Friday the 13th, I think, is the worst franchise of all of them because as kind of cheesy or as bad as the other ones are, and they don't really age that well always, at least the others follow the rules they create in their own universe. And now we'll kind of get into the first one here, but the other movies, they have the twist at the end for a sake of the twist, and it doesn't follow the rules that it's established in the movie. Like in the second one, the twist at the end is Jason's mother pops out of the water and grabs the person. But it's like, spoiler alert, in the first one, her head's chopped off. So how is she in the water and how is it now reattached? And just even the way that Jason even comes to, like, keeps coming to life, it's all like murky in a way where, again, if you can't kill the dude, who am I rooting for? Like, he's just going to murder everybody. Why do I care? But that's in the franchise as a whole. Like, we'll probably have some interesting thoughts about the first one. But anyway, so that's why I wanted to pick it.
Yeah.
When Mrs. Voorhees' head gets chopped off, like, there's that shot of just her hands, like, searching for it a little bit. I was laughing hysterically.
Yeah. No, I had the same experience because they're in that shot that you'd see at one point, it's just her hand on the screen. And I don't know why, but I imagine that it was going to, like, form a middle finger. Like, just gonna flip. It didn't happen, obviously, but I was fully expecting that middle finger.
Like, she invented the middle finger and then, like, the extension of the thumb, even. That would be amazing lore if that was the case.
Yes, that's all you can attribute that to. What's her name? What's that actress's name? Betsy Palmer, right?
Who disliked the film, right? Didn't she, like, I think I read online that she didn't like it.
Yeah, I saw something that was saying, I watched a video that was saying she did it because she needed a new car. And she was okay. She was like, yeah, I'll do this piece of shit movie.
Yeah.
But she was great. I mean, she, you know, even for somebody just accepting a paycheck, I mean, she put herself into it. She was fucking creepy, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, because I think of the big slashers, you think of Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Chucky, Child's Play, I think, and maybe that's just being born in 84 and growing up kind of when I grew up, like those were the ones in the video store, you know, those were front and center, those were the ones you would choose. And I don't know why, maybe it's because it's so, you know, because Freddy has the whole dream thing and Chucky is a little doll. In my mind, I think of Jason Voorhees as kind of the default, just a dude in a suit, in his, you know, work gear or whatever, with a Friday the 13th mask. You know, Friday the 13th for me is, and maybe even because of those problems you outlined, Noah, is kind of the, you know, prototype of a slasher movie, you know? And
yeah, and doesn't it make sense? Like, how did he become an adult? He died as a kid, so how does he become an adult again? So, right. I mean, he's a reanimated zombie sort of thing? Like, right. It falls off the rails in the second movie, basically.
Right, when he dies...
Because I actually enjoyed this one.
Yeah, when you're right, because he dies as a kid in 1958, yeah. And then in 1980, he's coming out of the water still as that kid, but then, yeah, whatever, a couple years, the year or two later, whatever, he's an adult all of a sudden, yeah.
I hear he's 2 credits away from his bachelor's degree now.
I believe it.
But yeah, so this movie, first off, I want to say I watched this because I've got most of the Friday the 13th movies on DVD or Blu-ray, I think. So I watched my version. And in the DVD setup menu to go put the subtitles on, it's the picture on the screen is Pamela Voorhees with a knife. So I'm like, I was like, what the fuck? Jeez. What if you've never seen this
movie? Spoiler alert.
Yeah, fucking spoiler right there on the DVD menu. But I wanted to ask you, Brent, when we watched Scream, there's a line in Scream. Oh, no, it's one of the questions. The murderer asks Drew Barrymore, I think, is who was the murderer in Friday the 13th? And she gets it wrong because she says Jason.
Yeah.
And it was actually Jason's mother. And when we watched that movie, I was like, oh no, is that going to be a spoiler for Brent? Because I don't think you had watched Friday the 13th at that time.
I forgot about that.
So I wanted to ask you, were you surprised by the killer, or did you know at all that it was going to be his mom?
I spoiled it for myself because as I was watching it, I was researching it, and like in somebody's synopsis was like, is it Miss Voorhees or not? And I was like, oh, okay, it's Jason's mom. But I thought it was unrealistic. I didn't like her as the... I respect this movie as, like, the beginning of it all. I think that's cool. I didn't think it was a really good... I thought the beginning of this movie was great.
Yeah.
And then... But I think it's because I'm, you know, it's like it's the time frame of, like, you know, a lot of scary movies have come out, and so I've seen lots of things... And so yeah. To see the beginnings, I appreciate that they were like setting the groundwork for that, for all of this. And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole idea of like the camera's pointed at the person. You never see the killer, but they're like interacting with just like the cameraman kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting and nice. But I mean, it's all been done so many times before that.
I think
I would argue it's been done a lot since. So I think it's similar to the movie Shrek. Where now you watch it and you're like, it's fine, I guess. But like when it first came out, there weren't movies like that. For one, CGI was pretty early age, you know, early stage, but also this kind of subverting the fairy tale world, You know, it's if you weren't there when it came out and how revolutionary. And it's kind of the same thing here. You watch this and it has every single slasher trope that you kind of have to realize that this came out before they were tropes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for saying.
You're watching the prototype, basically.
Yeah. Well, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately, like showing movies to my daughters where it's like, and we'll get to the end and they're like, yeah, that was fine. And it's like, man, but you can't understand it, having things
people
that
lost their minds when they saw it in the theaters.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, yeah. And I had this experience when I read, I think last year I read, what's that Shirley Jackson book? House on Haunted Hill. And, or Haunting of Hill House, whatever it is. And I read that book and it's good. I really enjoyed the book, but I got to the end of it and I was like, that's it? That's the whole thing. And I think it's just because I've seen so many things, read and watched so many things since that have been influenced by that it's the original kind of loses some of its punch, you know? But
I mean, there's some great stuff in there, like when the girl was explaining her dream. That was so neat and like such a well-written little scene when she's like, and then it sounded like pebbles, like the rain sounded like pebbles on the ground, yeah. And it turned to blood. And I was like, oh, that was like really cool. It painted a great picture. Like, there's some great writing in it.
And the acting, like I think for the most part, the acting is pretty good. Like it's not, you know, corny and unbelievable. And I think what you said, Noah, is a good, because it is like you, because this is obviously influenced by things that came before. Halloween came out a couple years before, and you could look back to a movie I haven't seen, but I've read about, Peeping Tom, or like Italian giallo movies or whatever, where it's all like first person killer with the black gloves on or whatever. But but it does seem like Friday the 13th in 1980 kind of opened the floodgates for all sorts of slasher. Then you had, you know, Freddy and Chucky and just all these different slashers that we've had since then, you know?
Yeah, and I thought one thing that kind of surprised me by the end is there's not the main character, like the one you know is going to survive. All the counselors were pretty evenly shown on the screen, so I think that was impressive to me, at least. And again, remember, I hate this franchise, so I'm going to be saying a lot of nice things about this movie, but it was really cool because a lot of times I love the Scream movies. There's some not a fan of, like, 3 can go to hell, but like I like those, but you know who's going to survive. I mean, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're like, how are they going to survive? But in this movie, it really was, you didn't know who was supposed to survive. Yeah. The fact that one girl did was shocking, because she kind of wasn't, I feel like she wasn't even in it as much as other characters. So I thought that added some suspense to it, because you didn't know who, because nobody was the main character.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely
switched focus from here and there. Yeah,
switch focus from character to character, and I hadn't seen this movie in years. Like I remembered, you know, some of the kill, like the arrow in Kevin Bacon's throat. I remember that Pamela is the killer. I remember the last scene, but I forgot when I was watching this last night. You spend so much time with Annie at the beginning when she's hitchhiking. I was like, oh, Annie, I like Annie. She's a likable character. I was like, this must be the final girl. We're spending so much time with her. And then it's like, oh no, she's like the first.
I liked her.
Yeah. I did like her. I was like, she's so likable. And then she gets murdered like right off the bat, you know?
I couldn't imagine like getting a job and then like hitchhiking to my job. It's so weird.
Back then, a lot of people would hitchhike. Wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
She goes into the restaurant and then like the oil tanker guy like grabs her butt and pushes her up in the truck and stuff. And
yo, dude, he gets a whole handful of both cheeks. And I was like, damn, dude. Like
poor girl, yeah.
Yeah. The whole diner scene was weird. And you got Ralph like being a fucking weirdo who shows up in the pantry later. He's just like hanging out in the pantry at the camp for no reason.
What's the term? Is it blood curse? Was it a death curse or something like that? Is that what he calls it?
Oh yeah, he said there's a death curse. And then they kept calling they called it Camp Blood, which I get. I think the original title when they wrote the script was A Long Night at Camp Blood.
Okay, that's cool.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Normally, when you see a movie like this, I'll be honest. I've seen this movie, I realized. And I don't think I've seen a movie like this where there were no campers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's only the counselors. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Good setting. Yeah, I like that they were getting ready for the summer. I also think it's great that the reason that Jason's mom wants to kill all these counselors are the things that these new counselors are actually doing. They're fooling around. They're not taking it seriously. They're trying to get laid all the time. Like, all of these different things are the reason that her son died. So it's, you know, you see these other movies where it's this projecting of someone paying for the sins of someone else and they're completely innocent. And in this movie, I mean, obviously, I'm not saying they deserve to die, but they were doing the things that the mom was mad that were happening when her kid was drowning. And I thought that was very interesting that they didn't make these counselors totally innocent. I mean, I thought it was kind of shitty, the guy pretending to drown just to make out with the girl. I'm like, oof, like, these are not that likable of characters.
Yeah, yeah, I was like, kill that guy, kill Ned. But I gotta say, I do like in that scene where they're, like, rushing to pull Ned onto the dock, and they've got Ned, and they're, like, 1 foot from the dock, they're about to put him on the dock, and one of the women, I think it's Brenda, like, puts a life preserver between them and the dock. I'm like, and they just throw it away. It's like, get the fucking life preserver out of here. We've got him to the dock already. You're too late. Yeah. You know,
she doesn't want to give him a concussion, even if he's dead.
Yeah. That was just, you know, there were certain like little parts of this movie where I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
Do you think that Mrs. Voorhees like stands in the tree line as like the new ownership comes in, the new counselors come in, and like gives them the benefit of the doubt momentarily? Like maybe this time they'll be more more professional,
right?
Maybe she sees them do all the bad stuff and she's like, oh no, they got to go. This is a sickness of this camp.
Yeah.
But I can see like walking up with the machete and then like they're doing something wholesome and nice and she's like, oh,
We'll wait until they slip.
Yeah, and then she sees them playing strip Monopoly, and she's like, yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
Yeah, strip Monopoly, man, that's a very clever. That's a good idea to make Monopoly better.
Yeah, yeah, such a despicable game. You got to do something to make
it make better. Stripping games worse because that game is rough.
Yeah,
that takes forever.
Yeah,
that's right.
Are you this is totally off topic, but are you familiar with the origins? I don't know, I read this in the last year or two. I found this very interesting, the origins of the game Monopoly. Mm-mm. No, it's, I think it was originally called the Landlord's Game or something like that, and it was created by this woman who, there are two versions of the rules. One is this, like, so she created the game to be a critique. She was very left-leaning and created the game to be a critique on capitalism. And and so you could play it by one set of rules where all the money goes to one person and everybody else ends up broke and busted and one person has all the money, which is the version that got bought and went into mass production and you can buy at your local Target today. But there's a
set... Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it that you're... Wait, I'm just curious... Is it like a team effort? You are working together in that case? Is the opposite?
Yeah, the second set of rules is more, it's more community oriented and kind of everybody profits together as you go along.
Okay, that's cool.
So.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, this is
interesting.
Totally off topic, but I thought that was super interesting.
And it ends like free parking is actually just like the capital.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at the end of the game, you just have a, like a Woodstock orgy on the free parking square. Oh, man.
Wow, I wanted the shoe and the top hat to storm the Capitol. Sorry, I'll strike that idea out. Okay.
And then there were a couple things in this movie where it seemed like there could have been foreshadowing, like when Ned shoots an arrow right near Brenda, like she's... And,
yeah, I thought that was foreshadowing.
Yeah, and then...
And she's backing up on the archery range.
Yeah, yeah, and then later she does get killed, like, well, we don't see her get killed, but she's ambushed at the archery range. But she doesn't get hit with an arrow. I was like, that just seems like a missed opportunity for some...
That would be something they would do nowadays.
Yeah.
That's something where they would add that little, that cheap callback for sure.
Yeah.
But back then it was more of just, she's going to die here. She almost died here and now she's going to. But yeah, I was expecting that too because I'm conditioned to that with movies nowadays with all the foreshadowing.
Yeah. And then the same thing with, I think it was Officer Dorf or whoever shows up early in the movie on his... Is he on his... Oh, yeah, he's on his motorcycle. He's like, are you kids out here? You smoking awesome. the grass, the ganja, the reefer, the kind bud? You know what I'm talking about. Like, they're like, okay, man, we're just, like, working at a camp. I don't know, bro. Like,
it's so confrontational.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, so confrontational. But then later in the movie, Steve, the owner, gets picked up by a cop. And I was like, oh, this is obviously going to be... Officer Dorp. No, it's a totally different cop. It's this guy named Sergeant Tierney. I was like, why did you need to cast somebody? Just make it the same cop. Like, why did
you? Yeah, you think.
Yeah. I don't know. There were just a couple things like that. Or even like the, before that scene where Steve goes to the diner and he's talking to the waitress Sandy. And, cause you go, you know, you spend all this time at the camp and then boom, all of a sudden you're at this diner with this neon light and you go inside and, he's like, how much do I owe you, Sandy? She's like, oh, it's just $235, you know. And then it cuts to him.
She was like, just a night with you, man.
Oh,
like,
that's...
She was like, they were like flirting with each other big time. It was amazing.
Yeah, which was, it's not a bad scene, but I was wondering, I was like, why, I don't know. I was like, that doesn't feel necessary. If you're writing a movie or making a movie, like, it seems like a waste of time and money and energy to have that scene in there, you know?
Well, I mean, they didn't, if this is the case, then they didn't really do a good job of it. But part of me wonders if they're adding all of these throwaway characters at the beginning and just kind of like interspersed to heighten the whodunit aspect, like introducing, since we know the counselors are all being killed, mm-hmm. we have to offer up all of these people who could potentially be the killer.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's, I mean, again, they didn't stick the landing with that. I did not get that feeling that they were adding all those red herrings, but that's the only reason I can think of having all of these completely unimportant sidebars with these characters that just like pop in for a second and then you never see them again.
Yeah.
So that's just speculation.
No, that makes it, because there were a couple times where, like when Bill kills the snake with a machete, and then there's a scene where maybe Ned's being a creep or something, but there were a couple times I was like, oh, I feel like this is building suspicion for Bill, or I feel like this is building suspicion for Ned. And that's an interesting facet of some slashers, you know who the murderer is. Like, you know, it's Freddy Krueger.
Pretty much all of them.
Yeah. Most of them. But then you have some like the Scream franchise, obviously, this first Friday the 13th. Have you seen Noah? Have you seen Sleepaway Camp?
No.
Okay, well then, I don't want to spoil anything, but that's another whodunit. You should. It's super interesting. I don't want to spoil
the. It's in the same vein as this one. For
yeah,
sure.
we had a really fun episode talking about Sleepaway Camp. It was one of our first episodes. I think it was like the third or fourth episode we did. But that, yeah, that's another super interesting. But yeah, the whodunit aspect is an it's like a sub genre, sub slasher genre. You know?
Sure,
that's right. I never thought of it like that.
There was, oh, just another one of those weird moments where I'm like throwing the life preserver in the water, like right on top of the guy, was where toward the end where everybody's pretty much dead at this point, and Alice starts making herself a cup of coffee. And I don't know if she like opens this coffee container and dumps the coffee in the coffee maker. And then she does not screw the lid back on the coffee thing at all. It's like, it's slanted. It's way, she just slaps it on there and puts it back on the shelf. I was like, Alice. You gotta put the lid on the coffee.
I mean, she makes a terrible roommate, you know? Some people just don't. I've had that where I've had the roommate that doesn't put the cap back on the toothpaste. I mean, some people just are inconsiderate like that. What can I say?
Wait, share toothpaste with a roommate?
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why that's...
Is that toothpaste, not toothbrush, Brent?
I was very quick to judge you. I'm sorry. I just never thought about this. A communal toothpaste. Okay. But you put the toothbrush. Okay.
So wait,
sometimes I touch the toothbrush to the toothpaste tube. Though.
Do you share toothpaste with your wife and children, or do you all have your own toothpaste?
My wife and I share a toothpaste.
Okay, and then the children have a toothpaste.
But I make out with her.
Yeah. Because... Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But you're not slurping it from. Okay, that's interesting.
I make out with her.
You can't wait. You kiss a woman?
Yeah. That I'm legally bounded to, dude.
That's right, because we just have a toothpaste container in each bathroom, and most of us brush our teeth in the large bathroom, and most of us use that toothpaste, which sharing that with children it's like sharing it with the worst roommates. It's terrible. Maybe I should get my own toothpaste. They're messy.
I mean, I don't know. I just grew up with our family sharing toothpaste. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we're the weirdos, but it's just that doesn't weird me out like it would a toothbrush with a stranger.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
I will say the worst part of this movie for me was the fight scene between Jason's mom and the final girl. Like, it was just embarrassing. Like, the whole thing was just the worst. Like, there was, for one, I feel like if it was a movie now, there'd be probably a bigger buildup to the twist that it's the mom. Like, maybe she'd be like, come with me, like, we'll be safe. And then she trusts this woman, because who's not gonna trust an old lady with a mom cut, you know, and go to, like, some place where it makes the girl extra vulnerable, and then the twist happens. It just kind of plunked almost immediately. So that was a little bit of a letdown, but also, like, just their fights were just pathetic. Like, apparently they couldn't afford stunt people for either character, so they had to play it super safe with soft hands, but it was pretty brutal to sit through that, and not the way that they're intending. Like, I was just like, this is like rock bottom. This is pretty bad.
Yeah,
I know, she's been murdering people with knives and arrows, and is she gonna, like, slap her to death? Like, she just, like, kept slapping her. But the girl
like barely pushes her, and she goes flying, and it's,
yeah.
She can only kill people with the element of surprise. I mean, it just that part was pretty rough for me.
And I absolutely agree. Yeah, it does look really weak. And I saw a couple videos I think talking about how they went, because I think most of her experience, Betsy Palmer, is on stage, and so she wanted to kind of rehearse the fight. And they go to do it, and she full on slapped Adrienne King, the woman playing Alice, and she, like, breaks down crying and runs to the director. Was like, she fucking slapped me, and she was like, yeah, we slap each other on stage. What are you talking about? And the director was like, no, in movies we don't do real slaps. You don't really slap people. Like,
wow. Yeah, I thought it was funny when Betsy, there's a part where she falls into, like, I want to say, like, hoses or something. There's, like, a stack of something where she falls. And I love when Alice hits her, and Betsy very visibly looks back to check to see that she's going to land correctly, and then she falls into it. It was very obvious that she was like, am I close enough? Okay, I am, and then falls.
Am I getting that new car? Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, and it is frustrating, because not only the fighting looks weak, but then Alice, like, keeps, like, she has a moment where she could either, I don't know, kill her or get away, but she keeps just, like, kind of knocking her down and then running away and then just getting recaptured. And then at one point she opens the Jeep and Annie is in there dead, which I understand that would be jarring.
Oh, yeah.
But she could have jumped in the Jeep and driven away, but she's like, instead she just runs off. I don't know. Yeah.
I just thought it was funny when Alice has a gun, and instead of shooting her, she lightly tosses it.
Right, yeah.
To, like, her assailant. I'm like, what is... She could shoot you with it. Like, why are you just handing it to her? That just worked. Or you can try and shoot, like, one of the two, but instead of just playing hot potato with a gun, right, maybe, like, do something else.
Yeah.
Well, and that would have been cooler, like, if she shot her, and then Voorhees comes back after, you know, like, just getting maimed a little bit. Like, that would have been more intense.
Yeah. Well, cause
I wasn't even mad at the end when Alice chops her head off. I wasn't even mad that that's just not realistic with a machete to be able to do that in one fell swoop, because at least the fight scene was over at that point. I was relieved.
Yeah, well, because she does.
Cause you have to hack someone's neck. Not like I know this from experience. You can't prove a thing. But you have to, like, hack their neck multiple times for that fact. It's just not one swipe. Machetes are sharp but blunt. They're not, like, samurai swords.
Right. Yeah.
A cat, maybe. Maybe a cat.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, yeah.
But, well, let's see, I had some notes about the cast, some really interesting stuff about the cast, but do you guys have anything else about the movie itself you want to discuss? Any other scenes or parts in the movie?
No, I'll just say, like, I did appreciate that you don't know who the killer is at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, they definitely could have doubled down on trying to make you suspect people, because I do think that they wanted you to. But, and that just didn't work, but I did appreciate that we saw that, and I appreciate that of all the slashers, the gore and stuff wasn't gratuitous like it was in the rest of the franchise or the other ones. I felt the kills were efficient but understated, and I was surprisingly impressed with that. Because, yeah. Again, kind of like you, Corey, I haven't seen this in years, yeah. So... I forgot a lot of that. I even forgot that, you know, I in my mind, I was pissed that Jason pops up at the end because that ruins the rules, but it was a dream sequence. So yeah. I'll allow, you know, like, so yeah. That wasn't a big offense in this one as it is in the sequels.
Yeah.
So, I'll just say this was way better than I remembered. Pretty much it.
Well, and I think the writer of this movie too was with you. In that he didn't approve of Jason coming back at the end and becoming the killer in subsequent movies. I think the writer was with you there. And just kind of a note on the writer I wanted to mention earlier, he said that in making Pamela the murderer, he was like, oh yeah, I wrote her as like the kind of mom you would want to have, who's a mom who would kill for you. And I was like, ooh, bro, you got some stuff we need to unpack, like, from your, but no, I thought that was, but no, the writer also said that he didn't like that they made Jason the killer at the end and that in subsequent movies, he was the murderer. Brent, did you have anything else about the movie?
No, I was involved in an online scam recently though.
Wait, what? What?
You hear about this?
Related to this movie or something totally different?
It could be related to this movie. It was like 10:30 at night a couple weeks ago, and we get a text message that says, "Your Papa John's delivery is on the way."
Okay, I think you mentioned. I think you mentioned this to me. Yeah, go ahead.
And I was like, "Oh shit!" Like, we're getting free pizza is what I thought first. This is amazing. They're going to deliver a pizza to our house. And then Kara and I, we went back to what we were doing. And then, like, the more, like, we kind of, like, talked about it briefly over the course of a few minutes, we realized, well, maybe we need to, like, check our account. Like, what if someone, like, hacked into our account? And Kara looked at she logged in, and it was being delivered to New York, like a house in New York. And we were like, well, shit, we didn't order this pizza. What gives? And she found the phone number, and I called the phone number of the pizza place in New York, and they were like, "Yeah, yeah, it's on the way. It's on the way." And I'm like, "No, this isn't me. I mean, this is me. I didn't order the pizza." And they're like, "Oh, weird." And they said like someone probably like maybe like logged into our account and ordered this pizza for like, and it was like a $16 pizza and breadsticks. It was like a very little order, and we logged into our Papa John's account. And they had wiped out our Papa Dough cash, like as you buy more pizzas.
Those motherfuckers.
I know, right? And so we canceled the pizza. And they were like, okay, cool, yeah, it's on the way. It's about to their door. But still, like, we'll refund you and we'll refund your Papa Dough. We're like, great. So it's an amazing scam because these folks, they somehow got Kara's login information, got a free pizza, and then we got a refund.
Right.
Absolutely, like, nothing bad happened. It's almost like a Robin Hood sort of like scam.
Right. Right. Stealing from, which, you know, the guy, I don't know that he's affiliated with Papa John anymore, but yeah, the Papa John of Papa John's fame is kind of an asshole, right? So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Racist asshole.
Yeah. That's funny. I do, you know, I remember what I was going to say earlier about the, at the very end when Jason comes up out of the water, I guess that was Tom Savini's idea. Because Tom Savini, one of the most famous special effects guys, you know, ever, these were his effects, the axe in the face, the arrow through the neck, whatever. And I guess it was his idea to have Jason jump out of the water at the end. And
I mean, I don't hate it. The fact that it's a dream and didn't really happen, I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just she has gone through some shit. So, of course, she's going to have, like, nightmares and weird dreams. The ending was, her reaction was kind of like weird, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like, which is like, they never found a body. It's like, oh, wasn't that like 30 years ago or like 20 years ago? The body would be long gone. I mean, that would be, you would not find any of that kid anymore. It's not like a pirate ship. Like, yeah. We decompose, you know?
Well, and I do, and at the end she says, then he's still there. And that kind of elevated it to me. To a kind of like, almost like a mythological, like, I don't know, oh, then he's still there. I don't know, like some kind of mythological story where...
I mean, maybe that's where the producers are like, oh, if we want to keep this going, he's made enough money for us to make a second one.
Right.
Where do we go? And then they saw that. I don't necessarily think this was set up for a franchise.
Right, no. Really
make, with her being the killer, it doesn't make sense. But I think they, to your point, maybe that's the thing that they latched onto as, oh, okay, so we can jump on this train.
Yeah. When it, and yeah, it's almost like,
clarifying. It's, oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's kind of like serendipitous that it, you know, the ending is right there for them to pluck and to pull into a part two. It almost reminds me of, you know, Deadpool 3 is coming out this year and sort of unrelated, but I was showing my daughters the Deadpool movies recently. We went back and watched Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2. And the little bit I've read about what the plans for Deadpool 3 may be is, man, the ending of Deadpool 2 where he does all the time travel and he goes back, that fits so perfectly into what Marvel is doing now with the TVA and the multiverse that, like, it was no way was that intentional, but it just lines up so well. Like, how could you not do, you know, take that opportunity, you know?
Sure.
But, are they mixing him with, like, with the X-Men finally, like the more,
yeah,
the,
well,
characters. Yeah, Wolverine is going to be in this, but, yeah. I mean, in all the other Deadpool movies, there was a couple X-Men characters in them as,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
absolutely.
So that's because it was 20th Century Fox that owned X-Men at the time, which is how they got Deadpool in the first place, is he's part of the X-Men IP,
yeah,
so yeah, they're wanting to combine those, so we'll, I'm cautiously optimistic. I like the first two plenty. I like Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, so yeah. We shall see what they do. I'm tired of spoilers. I'm not nearly online as much as I used to be, yeah. But whenever I am, it reminds me why I'm not online, and it's because there's nonstop news, spoilers, speculation, and I just want the movie to be good, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and to Brent, to what you were saying, and anybody listening who may not, you know, follow things as closely. Disney bought out 20th Century Fox, I don't know, a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. So that gave them back.
Longer than that.
Has it been longer? Was it pre-COVID?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So they got, so that.
They bought it for about $51 billion.
Damn. Yeah, so then that gives them the rights, then the film rights to the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. So now it's, so now that's all fair game for Marvel to use. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
now it's only Sony that owns the Spider-Man IP.
Yeah.
But now Disney has everything else under its own wing. That's one of the main reasons that they bought it. Not the only reason, but one of the big, big reasons was getting that IP back.
Yeah. Yeah, so just a couple notes I wanted to make. I was just kind of going through the actors in this movie, and the guy who plays Enos or whatever, the truck driver who gets a handful of Annie's butt, played by an actor named Rex Everhart, who I don't know that he hasn't done a whole lot of stuff, but he was the voice of Belle's father, Maurice, in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, interesting. Nice. So
cool. Yeah.
I thought that was weird. And then the kid who plays Jason in this, In 2018, he started a punk rock heavy metal band called First Jason. So this kid...
Nice!
So you can, yeah. So you can go, like, check this kid out.
That's awesome.
He's playing punk shows around under the band name First Jason.
That's cool.
And then the one other thing, well, a couple other things, but one is the guy who plays Bill is played by Harry Crosby, and this sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole. He's an investment banker now, but he's the son of Bing Crosby.
I was going
to
ask.
Yeah. And also, this was news to me, too, as I went down this rabbit hole. Also, Tasha Yar from Star Trek The Next Generation, Denise Crosby, is the granddaughter of Bing Crosby. She's the niece of Bill, Harry Crosby. So, I just thought all that was interesting. Cool. And then the last thing I want to mention is the famous, you know, the sound from this movie, that I didn't, yeah. Apparently the composer, Henry Manfredini, that's him on a microphone. And that's a shortened version of when Pamela's like, "Kill her, mommy, kill her, mommy." I guess that's where the I guess that's where that comes from.
Oh, cool.
It's short.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I like that.
Good trivia, dude.
Yeah, I didn't know that till today. I guess it's shortening of the line, "Killer Mommy."
On our next episode, we're going to be covering 1971's The Touch of Satan. So be sure to check that out. And as always, you can follow us on social media, on Facebook at Danger Explosion Presents Headcanon, on Instagram at HeadCanonPod, on Twitter at HorrorMoviePod, and you can always follow the subreddit r/HorrorMoviePod.
Awesome. All right, well, Brent, do you want to go ahead with your headcanon, or you want me to go first?
Can you go first? I'm just writing the last sentence.
All right. Well, so my headcanon is, so Steve is the guy, the owner of this camp. He's the guy who sets everything up. Obviously, he gets killed during this movie. And so in my mind, I forget when it's supposed to be, a day after this takes place, which is, for the record, this is Friday the 13th, as stated in the movie. Friday, June 13th, there's a full moon that day. It's also mentioned as being Jason's birthday, which I don't know if I realized before I rewatched this movie that Jason has a definite birthday, a specific Friday the 13th. But... So this murder all happens and everything, and Steve's got everything set up. He's got his counselors there. He's got the buses set up. But then Steve's dead, so nobody's there to cancel plans. So a day or two later, 50 children get loaded up onto buses and sent to this camp. And then the bus drivers have done their job, right? They're not. So they park at the camp. They open the doors. They let all the kids out, drive away. So like a day or two afterwards, 50 kids flood this camp and there are no adults there. There's just like caution tape and dried blood on some of the, and I'm just interested in seeing what these 50 kids do, like stranded at this Camp Crystal Lake, with no,
it's like a home alone situation.
Like, so wait a second, Corey.
Disappear.
Corey, are you trying to say, are you telling me, is this another trivia piece that you're slipping in, that Friday the 13th is the prequel to Lord of the Flies?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I want to see. I want to see a Camp Crystal Lake Lord of the Flies, yes.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
That would be a great movie, dude.
Yeah.
The movie opens up, the kids all pour into the camp, and then the count, everyone's dead.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, let's just go with this.
If I ever got a shot...
Yeah, there's weapons there. They're all killed with all these weapons. There's already plenty of weapons
shit.
There.
They could do Weekend at Bernie's shit. They could,
yeah.
The cops come, and they like have to like puppeteer like the counselors at the window.
Yeah, if I ever got a shot at a Friday the 13th sequel, that's just like the Halloween franchise. There are like four or five different timelines. There are like three different sequels to the first Halloween movie. That's what I would do. I would do a direct sequel to this very first movie and just retcon... Just ignore everything that came after this first movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
That's brilliant.
All right. Well, Noah, you want to go, or Brent, do you have one?
Can we go?
Go for it.
Okay. In my headcanon, Kevin Bacon lives. And he goes through extensive rehabilitation with yoga and dancing. And he further conditions himself into, he's better again, in a small town in Kansas while dancing in a factory.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah,
I can see that.
And the locals do not like it.
They don't like it.
Yeah.
But he's been through some things.
Yeah. He got an arrow in the fucking throat. That would be a different, that would be a much darker Footloose. He's like, look, I got an arrow in the fucking throat, my guy.
They're like, let the boy dance.
Let him dance.
Well, I mean, Kevin Bacon has just that little thing that he puts to the hole in his throat. And that's, and he talks like this, like that's.
Let me dance.
Yep. Yeah. Easy. Oh, that happens all the time. So he's good. He's fine. He can walk it off.
Did you see the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special?
That was wonderful. I rewatched it during Christmas. That's wonderful.
Yeah, he's so good at it. He's so fun. He's just fun, you know.
Oh, the whole thing was, yeah. Aren't they like going to meet? Yeah, that's right. I forgot that was the premise of that. It was, yeah. Like, yeah, they want to meet Kevin Bacon or something. They want to kidnap him as a present
to Peter because he's feeling sad about Gamora and that's killing right. his dad and stuff. So, yeah. Yeah.
Which, what a fun role. And, I think James Gunn had worked with Kevin Bacon on Super. At least they'd done at least one movie together before. So, but what a fun role for Kevin Bacon, you know?
Oh, yeah. Super fun.
So what about you, Noah? Do you have a headcanon? If not, I'll cut this question out.
It might be a headcanon. It might be conspiracy theory.
Ooh, okay.
What was the name of the crazy guy that the cop came to warn them about?
Ralph.
In my mind, he was her accomplice because Ooh. He was in those buildings. I think he was planting the weapons for her to then kill them with because he just pops out and it's very convenient for him to act super crazy. So they could just be like, oh, he's just a crazy guy, but he might be crazy like a fox. So I think he was the accomplice.
Could it be his dad? Is it also his dad?
I think that might be a thing.
Could
I
be.
Think I would not rule that out whatsoever. But it was so random and so like one and done. One of those characters that just popped out, acted crazy, and then you never saw him again. That I think there's more to it. In my mind, he committed the perfect crime.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He like, rode his bike from that fucking town to the camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would he do that unless he had very specific reasons? It's not just because he's crazy.
No.
How would he have even gotten to the camp if he's crazy riding a bike?
You know, it's very like very Kaiser Soze, right?
I think so. He may have killed some of them. Who knows? He may have been the one to kill the first one before they found him. We don't know. I'm just saying, I think there's more to that.
Awesome. Well, Noah, is there anything, you know, we kind of talked about your production company and everything. Do you want to plug everything one more time or mention everything before we wrap up and get out of here?
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, you can follow the production company at Pure Left Productions. So we might have some announcements, hopefully in the near future. We're starting to pitch to studios, so we'll see what comes from that. Definitely check out SpartacusCoffee.com. Like I said, it's mission-based, so you can feel good drinking coffee that costs even just a little bit less than most other coffee companies.
And it doesn't get stale if you get to screw the cap on all the way.
This is true. It stays fresh for a long, long time. Other than that, yeah, just, I mean, I'm not as up to the weekly show on my Coffee Time podcast with Noah Kinsey, but that's still going. I have one or two shows a month, so it's been very interesting, the conversations that we have. Some of them aren't exactly the lightest, but it's so definitely check that out. But I think that's it. I think right now it's kind of a slow time in the industry anyway. It's going to ramp up the end of the month as people just get back from the new year. So I don't have too much, just kind of stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you again for coming on. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah.
And thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I was excited too.
Oh yeah, always. Yeah, you're somebody we're always going to have back as often as we can get you in the rotation. So
that'd be great. I love you guys. So that's great. And it's great talking to you. It's been a minute, so it's great to catch up with you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Likewise, love you too, man. And everyone at home, thank you for listening. This has been Headcanon.